Or to get all of the frustrations and mind-based hearts out of his love. You have to know Yiddish to come to this place. It's like, ben ich al zoeken, was de God zoeken? Shall hoek naar ben daar. I have in front of me, and after the share I made these copies of it, this is a two sentences from this week's Time magazine. And there's something to be proved. I want to prove something with this. I want to demonstrate something like this with this. And which is going to take us on to the shear. I don't just talk about the... You don't hear me? Now you hear me? All right, now you hear me. This is my way of real introduction to the shear. I get my Time magazine yesterday, due to come on Monday, and there it was, this week's Time magazine, and there it is. There's a picture. A wall. There's a hole in the wall. And there's a very, I would say, sweet-looking girl, supposed to be looking at the hole. And the caption on the bottom says the following. Listen very carefully, because this is a, these are two sentences that have been crafted so carefully. A great deal of thought went into these two sentences. Gaza, a Palestinian girl inspects the damage wreaked on her school in the Gaza Strip during Israel's eight-day offensive against the Islamist group Hamas, which holds sway in the cramped, tiny territory. Sentence one. Israel is on the offensive.
Offensive.
They bomb schools. There are poor little innocent Palestinian girls looking at their classroom that was destroyed by the big bad Israelis. And where is she living, this poor Meinola? In the tiny, cramped quarters of the Gaza Strip. The next sentence says, the November 21st ceasefire ended hostilities, but only after more than 150 Palestinians, including many civilians, were killed. Six Israelis died. Okay? Now, I hold that I personally, in my experience, outside of Mein Kampf, I have never read a sentence so full of shekel, falsehood.
Who wrote that?
This is in Time magazine.
Why do you read the only Time magazine?
Will all of you just calm down? There has to be somebody who stands on watch for Claudius Clark. You have the right to go ahead and lead a calm, quiet life without reading Time magazine. Not me. I'm on the front line. Okay, wait a minute. There is no hint whatsoever in these two lines of thousands of rockets shot over years. No indication even that Israel made an awesome act of stupid sacrifice by banishing 10,000 people from Gush Katif and hand over them a a veritable Gan Eden, which they turned into a Gehenna. This is bad. Very bad. I wonder how many people will read this and they're going to read it and that's it. So now, what I wanted to point out is a reputable magazine. Oh, and you can read Absolute Sheker. It's a lie. The whole thing is a lie. It's a calculated lie.
Is your mom still alive?
Write a letter.
Is who still alive?
Yeah.
Who?
Can you write them a letter? They're alive.
Who are you talking about?
Are
they alive? Is that right? I don't know.
And it's horrible, and it's making us very miserable to read.
I'm getting everybody so excited here.
Yeah,
so my suggestion is, and I'm going to leave sheets like this outside, write a letter to the editor. I have given you all the information over here. Do something. Send an email, write a letter to the editor, let them get a few thousand letters telling them, you dirty anti-Semites. That's all, okay? Next step. Let's take our. You think it's only Time magazine that upsets me? Jerusalem Post. Thursday. There was an article in Jerusalem Post. I got sick. I literally got sick. Don't tell me. Don't read Jerusalem Post. Okay. I'm gonna, with great difficulty, I'm going to read what's written over here, and I called around to friends of mine, rabbis, educators, Gute Yidden, that they should read it, and the calls that I got back were, oh God, it doesn't say it here, but I'll tell you what the article was about. Shmuley Voltaire, who, by the way, I loved reading his articles, but I'm finished. My honeymoon with Shmuley Voltaire is over. He wants to explain what went wrong in the marriage of General Petraeus and his wife, his Martha or something like that. What went wrong? Why was he unfaithful to her? So the Kaiser Kop Meyer, Shmuley Voltaire, says the following. Jacob's love for Rachel is one of deep passion and yearning. It is love as covetousness and desire. It is the fairest kind of romantic love. It is also the most tragic. Romantic, passionate, lustful love that isn't balanced by partnership and intimacy nearly always ends badly. Either because the fire is died down, or because it burns so brightly it consumes both participants. Jacob feels in his bones that his passion for Rachel must end disastrously. How does he know? Thus he is drawn to kiss her, but he immediately weeps. Wow. He recognizes that in this imperfect world, perfect love is impossible to attain. He wants Rachel to be his soulmate, but he intuits that he is destined to lose her. This is a fascinating piece of fiction. The guy has a tremendous imagination. He got it all figured out. It was Jacob's inability to value both dimensions that led to many problems in the life of his own family. Now, you know, I'm in an angry mood, so whatever I say, don't anybody start up with me, be in trouble. I'll go on the offensive. Now, you know what he does in this paragraph? He out-riskins Riskin. Riskin can come and learn from him how you take the Bechir Sheba Avos, the most chosen of our patriarchs, and turn him into mush dirt. Watch. It was Jacob's inability to value both dimensions that led to many problems in the life of his own family. Jacob seems scarred from his childhood. How would everything does Shmuley know? Later, his father favored Esau, and he felt rejected. Later, he will repeat many of these mistakes in favoring Joseph. creating even more painful sibling rivalry amongst his own children than he experienced with Esau. Oh, that means that the whole business with Yosef, and that's really going to be the topic for the next few weeks, Yosef, all right? Yaakov he didn't get it. He's perpetrating the same terrible crime that his father Isaac did to him. What Isaac did to him, he does unto his children. Jacob struggles to appreciate the stability of Leah and gravitates exclusively toward the drama of Rachel. Leah is stable, Rachel is, you know, we'll see what Rachel is. And just remember, I have to say before I start reading it, we're talking about Rachel Imenu. We're talking about a place that hundreds of thousands of Jews go to daven by her grave. We're talking about a woman who refused to be consoled by God that her children are going into exile, and God makes to her that great promise, her children are going to come back to their boundaries. We are here in the course of Rachel Imenu. But you always thought you knew Rachel, you understand? You didn't know Rachel. Now you're going to find out. She accuses Jacob of being responsible for her not falling pregnant. He fires back that he is not God and is not responsible for her infertility. Dramatic relationships are addictive. And Rachel is the drug of choice of the Abish, the Hupping, the Rachel. Should forgive him. Rachel forgive him because he knows not what he writes. Rachel is playful, girlish, and evinces at times an immaturity that is often characteristic of women whom men desire mightily. So God should forgive me for reading this rubbish. She can also be callous about Jacob's love for her. When Reuben brings flowers for his mother Leah, Rachel strikes a deal with Leah to change the flowers for a conjugal night with Jacob. What Leah longs for, Rachel treats as mere currency. Unlike Jacob, who understands intuitively the tragic nature of passionate romantic love, Rachel thinks they have endless time to be together. One night will make no difference, but Jacob knows the clock is ticking. To me, next week, into the ongoing saga of Jacob and Rachel. All right? This is a Shandana Harpa. This is nonsense. This is not Torah. This is making fun of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. And as I said, it's absolute fiction, but it's worse. It's ugly fiction. He thinks the Torah is some kind of a pulp novel. And we think we're simple people, you understand? With all the passions and the lusts and the girlish heen and hair. So I'm going to move you, right now I'm going to move you light years away from this. And I'm going to learn with you a piece from a shir that was sent by Rav Aaron Kotler's at Tzavik Luglacha. They just marked his 50th yahrzeit. He died in 1962. Oh. This shir was given in 1961. I believe it was a Torah Masorah convention to educators. What we really should do between the reading of Poteach and the reading of Rav Aaron is go to the mikveh. Go to the mikveh and then start getting ready for this. It's worthwhile going through this Chabadim, and it's only one section of a much larger shir. And the purpose of the shir was to tell educators, how do you teach Chumash? How do you teach Chumash? What's the approach? Is it the risk in Poteach approach, if we should call that an approach? Or is there another approach? There's a Torah approach. Let's go. The Harei L'Moshel, this is so fascinating, you know, it's like he wrote it, he said it 51 years ago, just for the likes of Shmuley Poteach. V'achel Moshel, for example, old parsha shal nashim and ashuk, another parsha in Torah, the people from the street, amaratzim. Medvinim al tabit sudam esulevet, they understand it in a completely perverted manner. They don't have a clue what the parsha is talking about. Parshat Yaakov v'Rachel. The parshat Yaakov and Rachel. If you want a classic example of what Rabbanan was talking about, people min hashuk who read it in a completely perverted way, you have it right here. Was I there? I just read. So he says, Kosova Torah says in the story of Rachel, so Yifat Toav Yifat Mara. Rachel was a beautiful Vayev Yaakov and Rachel, he loved her. The Chol HaYachas Shohaya Ben Yaakov and Rachel, the entire relationship between Yaakov and Rachel is problematic for people in Hashuk who don't know how to read a Pasuk Chumash. Im Ma'arichim Parshazu B'Tarovet, what does this sound like? Every sentence over here, Rabbi Aaron just gets to the heart of it all. Im Ma'arichim Parshazu, if we assess and understand this parsha, b'tarovet kol shehi shel ritzonot, with some kind of a mixture of wills or passions, if you any mixture of that, then you should know of mamish pogim b'Yaakov Avinu, you are hitting at Yaakov, you are hurting Yaakov, shedemuto hakukah b'kisei hakavod. Can you imagine Chazal say this in a number of places? That on the holy throne of God in heaven, Yaakov's face is engraved there. The Medrash even says, when Yaakov is on his way out of Haran and the angels come down the ladder, they are saying to each other, where is the one whose face we see on the holy throne of God? Let's go see it. And they come down and they see Yaakov. We're not talking about just another Joe Blow, a Petraeus, you understand, from the image of God. Ubechlau. And you can see he's going to make a number of statements that make it so clear that you can't learn the parasha anyway except the way Rabban is learning it. Ubechlau ain't called Pshat the parasha l'fi ha'arachazu. There is no way to learn pshat in this parasha according to this assessment, that there are feelings and lusts and desires and all sorts of other stuff involved over here. Kilu biur ha'in and hoya ketargum ha'mimuli shalaksukim. If the explanation of this parasha would be according to the absolute literal meaning of the parasha, he asks a gevaldig question that none of these guys answer. Who was it that made the suggestion that Yaakov worked for 7 years for Rachel? Who made that suggestion? Yaakov made the suggestion. Yaakov. It did not come from Laban. You see what's going on over here? If this is the Rachel that has inspired lust in Yaakov, why doesn't he say, let's get married now and I'm worth 7 years afterwards? Just like he did when 7 years later he indeed married Leah. And then he said, well, you tricked me. So Laban tells him, listen, after we finish the Shevet Rachel, you'll take Rachel and you'll work for me 7 years afterwards. Which is exactly what he did. Why is Yaakov the one who volunteers that he will work for 7 years for Rachel? And then Laban is going to bring the pasuk that I truly have to say I never really understood. It says that he worked for the 7 years for Rachel. Vayihu be'einav kiyamim achodim. They were in his eyes like just a few days. Laban says, what are you talking about? Somebody who desires something every day is years. Eons, 7 years, to have to control that passion? And why did you suggest it? Nobody asked them.
Yeah.
Watch.
Why?
Let's go ahead. Now he says, Madu Nadev Yaakov Why doesn't the Jacob volunteer Lavod Shevah Shanim Lifnei Suav? Why did Jacob? He volunteered. I'm gonna work for 7 years before I get married. Lavan lo amar lo zod. Lavan never said that to him. El Yaakov he sees off meyatzmo. It's Jacob who suggested this himself. If we're talking about a relationship over here that is being charged and fired by lust, Yaakov would have made another suggestion, the simple suggestion. I'll marry her, and I worked 7 years for her. I don't know why you started in 7 years. I'll work a year for you, 2 years. Vold, ma'abir, this is the pasuk that's really difficult. Now, what's the meaning of vayiyu be'enof kiyomim achodim ba'ahavato ota? Do you hear this? Look at that pasuk. Those are the exact words of the pasuk. That 7 years was like a few days because of his love for her. If it's the shmuli v'peah stuff, you can't even read the pasuk. Pasuk makes no sense. Hanen yodua. It's known, Shekishor, the wrote said, Marshu, if a person wants something, that's called Shor Shemabila Beinole Behitzbalut Ritzono, every hour that it goes by, between the time that he wants it until he will finally get it. Not, they are Kiyovalot, like groups of 50 years, eons of time. It draws out like years. Those 7 years should have been like endless, endless time, not like a few days. How was it that Yaakov Taka didn't recognize that it was Leah and it wasn't Rachel? What happened over there? What do you mean? How does this happen? Vadai uvadai. So he says, one thing is absolutely certain. Shebiru kazer. This kind of an explanation of the parasha, we'll call it the Shmuli, the Boteach explanation of the parasha, is siluf hamikra. It's a perversion of the Torah. The chiruv v'giduf. It is shameful. It's blasphemy. Yeshlim Kama has baited al pi chazal the parasha zu. Our rabbis have a number of different ways to explain the parasha. V'harei echad, he's going to give you one of his beidin hapshutin, the simple ones. Ki yadua etzel Avram. Now, you have to listen carefully for this. This is very, very beautiful, and this is Torah's emes. This is Torah's emes. Ki yadua etzel Avram lo hoya od gemar had binyan shel klal. So what's taking place in these parashas in Torah? The fact is, from the moment that Avraham Avinu sets foot in Eretz Yisrael until the very end of Sefer Bereshis, there is one underlying theme. There is one thing that is taking place. To build a family that will be the nucleus of an eternal people. That's what it's all about. By the end of Sefer Bereshis, when the Yosef and his brothers are reconciled, we now have that great core, that great nucleus of 12 children, the children of Yaakov. They are the ones that are going to take us through history. That's what's going on in Sefer Bereshit. And therefore he says, we know of course that when Avram did not complete the job, he didn't complete the job because one of his children was Yishmael. Mm-hmm. And he had Yitzchak. So Avram did not complete the construction of Yisrael, because Yisrael had come from him. Yitzchak also didn't complete the job because amongst his children was Esau. On the other hand, Yaakov haitan mitato shlema. Yaakov is the one whose bed was complete. All 12 children were ready to shoulder the burden of building an eternal people, unmatched in all of history. Now, Vayu b'nei Yaakov, name also, when the Tosaf says b'nei Yaakov were 12, all of them. Yaakov hoya b'chir ma'avos, Yaakov is referred to by our rabbis as the chosen of the fathers. V'zochol l'hakim et Beit Yisrael, he was the one who merited, he established the house of Israel. Yaakov yada, listen very carefully. Yaakov yada, he knew. She'olav lavor tziruf achat tziruf v'zichuch achat zichuch k'dei sh'yizke l'holit shifteka. Yaakov Avinu knew that he must personally go through purification after purification, cleansing after cleansing. He has to make himself a perfect human being, servant of God, so that he should be zocher that all 12 children are going to be tzaddikim gedolim shiftei ka. That's not a simple job. Lachen Yaakov lo nosa isha biyoto ben arbaim. That's why Yaakov didn't get married at age 40. His father did, but he didn't. He didn't get married at 40. He could change also if Yitzhak his father Yitzhak did. V'afilu kishenishlach mibeisov lo seif isha. When they send him out at the beginning of Parashat Vayetzov, Yetzir Yaakov v'yashav v'yel echorona. So his parents might have thought that he's now going to go and get married. You know, it's about time. The history of the world all depends on you. We can't afford to have a single son age 40 go get married. But he doesn't go. He goes to the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Eder and he spends 14 years there. L'chein Yaakov lo nosa isha, he didn't marry a wife when he was 40, just as his father Yitzhak did. V'afilu kishenishma v'beitzolo lo seik yishay, even when he was sent from his father's house to marry, v'ayoz ben shishim v'shalosh. He was 63 years old at the time. Shemtzata redi Yaakov, shemtzata zos chasen ha'odin? No. Yashar v'beishem v'eivar ala Torah arves, yishon 14 years. He sat in the base medish of Shem Ve'er to the Muchach, the Perishat Sukkim. Rashi brings it in a number of places. There are 14 years missing over there. 14 years missing. And we have all the major dates in the life of Yaakov. You can figure it all out from the Sukkim. 14 years. And Chazal tell us what after those 14 years he went to study Torah. L'bein Slavon Higia, Yaakov, he's 77 years old when he arrives in the house of Lavan.
Wow.
U'bechol zot, he's 77, despite that, he gish adayim yesho lalot malo malo. He felt that he still has to climb further in his devotion and his dedication and his single-minded love of God. The lama b'nabrei kol, and he also knows another thing. His big challenge in the house of Lavan is to retain that strength of his devotion to God. Because for him, being able to pass that test will mean that his children, the children who are going to be born, are going to be able to withstand a world opposing them. And we're going to make it through history. Kedei l'achin et b'nei Yisrael lishmor al-mavrikatam gam bein ha'umot. In order that Israel should have the strength, the tenacity, the courage, the determination to maintain their single-minded devotion to Torah. I'm in the middle of reading a book, and it's unbelievable. And you're going to see, I'm going to show you that later in this year too. If you want to know what's unique and what's unusual about us, you know, you have to talk to, not in Jewish lessons, go to a guy, a Sayyidin's fellow. Robert Wistrich, my great hero who we talked about a year ago and 2 years ago, who wrote The Lethal Obsession, The History of Anti-Semitism, an awesome work, 1,200 pages, but all right, the last 200-300 are footnotes, so I didn't have to read that, okay? We went through most of it, I'm ready to go through it again. So he now wrote another book. If I tell you the story of what I went through in order to get a copy of that book, it's not on sale in this country, but you know, when I want someone, I go after it, but that can be for another time when I get upset about something else. Anyway, here it is. This book, he describes the Jewish and the non-Jewish left over the last 200 years. The extent of their hatred, and I keep reading, he goes through Goyim and Yidden, Karl Marx, Moshe Hess, those are the Jews, don't ask, Rosa Luxemburg, and I'm shining his foil. And you know what they all keep saying? I mean, this is a people separate. This is a people, you know, they don't mix with anybody else. You know, they're antisocial. These people just, you know, they're never going to become part of society. And I'm reading all of this, you understand, and I say, hurrah, that's exactly what we are. They know very well what we are. Yaakov Avinu knows that in the house of Lavan, he's going to have to pass on to his children this eternal strength of the Jewish people. Ah. Yaakov Yoda, okay, Lachen Yaakov Lo, no, yeah, so now he's 77 years old. Yashab the Beit Shem Beira, 14 years he was there. He comes to the house of Lavan, he's 77. Ubechol Zot Hirgish, he felt that he still has to go further. And Lamo the Madrekar Togam the Beit Lavan, to remain on his spiritual level, even in the house of Lavan. You know what? That's the real meaning of Im Lavan Garti.
The Taryag
Shamar. The Taryag Misot Shamar. Incidentally, just, that's one of the most famous Rashi's in Kodesh. I don't want to upset you, but my brother Oliver Shalom in his Sefer Rashi says, there is no Rashi of this sort in all of the 15 Kitvei Yad manuscripts of Rashi that he cited. Some printer put it in at an early stage. The first time it appears is Dufus Lisbon, a Chumash with Rashi that was printed in Lisbon in 1491, just in time for Jews who are going to be thrown out of the Iberian Peninsula, that somebody brought with him a copy of that printed Chumash to Italy, some other places, and from there he traces how it begins to appear in 1501 and 1503. There were three or four printings in Venezia, in Venice, and there you find the Rashi. But the Pasuk really means, or whoever put this in was just a brilliant poet. He shouldn't have passed it off as Rashi. But in Law and Garthi, the Taryak Mitzvah Shemarati, the ability to withstand the hateful onslaught of Lavan. You know what it is? It's like an inoculation. You get a little bit of the machla, and you build up. He built up the antibodies against the Lavans, who are biki shlakers hakol, who want to destroy everything. And you know what? He gave that to his children, and his children gave it to his children. His children ad hayom hazeh.
Amen.
And I am praying, I think you should also add a little prayer, Netanyahu, don't give in to a world that are a bunch of hypocrites.
Whores.
What did you say?
Whores.
Oh, yeah, I don't know such words. Oh, wait, I got to finish for Alright, just one moment. Go ahead. Stand up so I can hear you.
Going back to?
Yeah.
Rav Aaron.
Who was his best friend? Your father was his best friend. The man who stood by Rav Aaron. I'm talking now. Irving Funen. Say the trouble with Buffer, he was of Aaron's right hand man. So that's why I'm giving you one minute to talk about Buffer.
I appreciate it. I don't understand one thing like this, you help me. In that smart tour, when it said the favorites were Hobbit, Rocktail, the coat, everyone, and so on, his Barnes understanding is that it was Ahava of spirituality and not passion. Is that the point of this
Let's give us another few minutes. Wait a minute. Let's hear Barnes. Why should I tell you what he says? Let him tell us himself what he's saying. So he says, Yaakov understands that he has to prepare himself spiritually for the greatest undertaking in all of history. He is going to be the builder of an eternal people, God's people. He has to be prepared for that great holy test. So he says, therefore, that's why Yaakov, feeling that he is not ready yet to undertake that great task, he suggests, I'll work for you for 7 years. In those 7 years, he purified and sanctified himself. Ke'omar, as it says, in love on Garty, and boy, I survived. And also, Aaron goes on to say that we may not understand it, but being a shepherd, we don't know what it means to be a shepherd. But he says the work of being a shepherd has all sorts of very esoteric and important meaning. I mean, it's not Stam that I've gone, Yitzhak, Yaakov. Moshe is a shepherd. What are you talking about? Not accountants, and not doctors, and not computer programmers. They were shepherds. So Rabban says, "V'avodat hatzon, in the work that some of sheep are yunyon gedolim she'etes kotseihem unroim, that we can't even see a little bit of it. Wait a minute, I forgot Dovid HaMelech. Malchus Yisroel, he comes from the sheep to be Melech. There must be something there. Is it a compassion, understanding, an ability to feel for every shepherd, he has to feel for every Jew? I don't know. I can make all sorts of toga on what's so important about a shepherd. But he says, no question about it, that shepherding was an extremely, extremely significant kind of occupation that created great people. Is it the being in touch with nature, being out alone in the field for hours on end? There can be so many things, seeing God day and night. By the way, how is God himself described? Mizmor LeDavid, Hashem Ro'i, God is my shepherd. There are chapters in Eschel where God is described as the Ro'e Yisrael.
Rosh Hashanah.
Kvakoras, Ro'e Edro, very good. The son of Tokev. As the shepherd counts his sheep and they go through, Mavir Tzono, Tarchas, Shiso, the sheep, there's something very powerful in being a shepherd. He had to deal with all sorts of issues that you don't find in the Shulchan Aruch Choshek Mishpah. During the day, I was consumed by the heat, the kerach balayla, and cold at night. And I didn't sleep. This is what he tells Lohan. Anybody who is hired to do a job for somebody, according to halacha, has absolutely no responsibility to do that. But he's going far, far beyond what the halacha requires. Because he knows that what he's going through a process of learning how to deal with and lead Klal Yisrael.
Lifnei Mishurat Hadin.
Our Gemara, the Gemara at the end of the Sokras Apollon on the Tzir calls this Netirut HaYeter Tov. This is guarding the sheep well beyond what is required. Arach Hashem, I saw him at the end of 7 years, Kishehirgish Yaakov, Shehino Roya Laholin Shifteko. When Yaakov finally felt that he is ready to undertake with sanctity and purity the job of establishing the 12 tribes, Amar, then, the moment he said, he reaches that point, he says, Masai Ami Yudhe Shabbat, when am I going to establish the 12 tribes? And he says then a very strange word, that Rashi brings it. He says, Havo li Ishti, give me my wife. Give me my wife. And Rashi says, you know, even a man in the street wouldn't express himself that way. But by Yaakov it's different. He has achieved the spiritual dimension that he's supposed to. He's ready for the job. You know what it means? Now is the moment. Klal Yisrael is going to be brought into the world now. And there's not a minute to waste. And despite that, Hashgacha had it that he was going to marry Leah before Rachel. He calls down Urayim et ha'achona ha'karbira shahit ha'nitzrechet l'kabrut Yaakov Rachel. What we see from here is all the preparation. And we're talking about spiritual, purifying process that was necessary before he can finally be with Rachel. This way we can understand the whole relationship between Yaakov and Rachel. Yaakov ka'amor ha'yesod ha'Torah. Yaakov was the foundation of Torah. Al shlosha dvarim ha'olam omei, world stands on three things, Torah, Avoda, and Gemilas Hasadim. Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Avram is Gemilas Hasadim. Yitzhak is Avoda, service of God to the extent that he's ready to give his life. And Yaakov is the Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim. And the fact is that he sits and learns for about more than 60 years before he gets married. 60 years. Mm. Now, this last piece I'm learning because I don't think I ever learned this piece in Rav Aaron. And I was sure 2 years ago was precisely this fascinating idea. Yaakov was the Yisod HaTorah. Titein emes liYaakov, the pasuk says. Titein give truth to Yaakov. Emes is said about Torah. Torah is the ultimate truth. It came, Hoya hakum ha'atei shebekoach ha'divur. He says, this shidduch, this Yaakov and Rachel, is fascinating. Yaakov is he's the mitzvah saseh. Pazar command, listen carefully. Rachel is the silent one. Rachel is the silent one. So since Yaakov is Torah, in Kein Hoya Hakum Vaseh, the positive mitzvahs of Torah, Shebekoach HaDibur, which comes through speech, that's what he had. Leben Zivugo Hoya Tzorech Liyot Me'ashev Ba'al Tazeh Shebekoach HaDibur. The power of the mouth, which distinguishes man from all other creatures on the face of this earth. Speech. The power of speech is two-pronged. There's the positive power of speech, and then there's the power of silence, not speaking. Yaakov is the power of positive speech. Rachel, you know, they're always different. Husband and wife, if he likes it cold, she likes it hot.
Yeah.
In the opposite way around, you know. They're all like different things. Usually the opposite. Usually the opposite. But that's part of the Eze Kinegdo, the ability to take these two opposites and put them together. We always think that we're going to find a boy or a girl that they're just alike.
Mm.
Fanzuk nicht tun. There ain't no such thing. So that Yaakov is the fountainhead tower of speech, and Rachel is silence. Rachel Omrim Chazal, and now I'll tell you the context in which I had said this 2 years ago. I think it was 2 years ago. The big question that hovers over the next four sessions, and now we're going to bring you in from this into Vayesha, Mikates, Vayigash, Vayechi. From the time that Avram appears on the scene, there are three parshios that deal with Avram. Lech Lecha, Vayera, Chaye Sora. From the end of Chaye Sora, Avram dies. There are three parshios that deal with Yitzchak. Vayera, when he's born, Chaye Sora, and Tolos die. That's it. Yaakov, difficult to say, in other words, Yaakov really is from there till the end of Torah. Till the end of Torah. So right, Yaakov, since he is the great heavyweight, and he's the one who's going to build Klal Yisrael, so you have already what? Toldos till the end of Vayechi. About the Shvatim, how many parshos are there about Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Dan, Naphtali? The truth is, there are none. There are just a number of incidents here and there. And even the great story that is going to engage us for four parshos until the end of Torah is all within the context of Yosef. He's going to be the story of the next four parshas. Even when it says that his father sent the brothers off to graze the sheep by Shechem, it says in the Torah, Vayelchu Echov, Yosef's brothers went to graze the sheep. It doesn't say Bnei Yaakov went. Everything is seen within the context and how it relates to Yosef. And we're going to be talking about Yosef for a bit. The big question that started with the Ramban many, many years ago, and everybody has attempted to answer it, is why doesn't Yosef send a letter home? Uh-huh. He achieves great power in Egypt. He is the one who holds within his hands the entire ancient world, the greatest empire that existed at the time. What was that? Song, was it during the Second World War? A Yiddish song, Abriva le de Mama? Send a letter home. Huh? I'm fine. Don't worry about me. How does he not do that? We're going to talk yet about it more. So I had given an answer some years ago. Mm-hmm. I think the share 2 years ago was on something similar that was said by Hanan Porat, the friend of the Bracha, Tayyarini Hanan Porat. What I said was the following. You know why Yosef doesn't send a letter home?
Why?
Because he has no idea what story the brothers made up. Mm-hmm. He has no idea what the dynamics in the family are. For all he knows, a letter from him may explode the whole house. All of a sudden, hey, what's this? What? Yosef, he's alive, he's inside, what's he doing there? What happened that day? Uh-huh. What happened that day? And when Yaakov goes after his children, to know what happened that day, he's going to find out. And he brought a beautiful story of Agnon. Well, a beautiful story. I forgot already the name of the fellow. What was it? Oh, Chaim Yankel. Chaim Yankel was a very poor fellow. Poor fellow. So, you know, he worked at odd jobs. Odd jobs. And he was married. All right, we'll give her another name. Capel. Okay? Chaim Yaakov. So anyway, his wife finally tells him, well, you know, maybe you know, you've been collecting money around here, going from house to house, collecting money. Maybe go out into the world. You know, go out other places. You know, maybe get a letter from the rabbi that you're a tayyeh egid, and people give you money. So he gets the letter from the rabbi. And off Chaim Yaakov goes into the world. Into the world. And then what happens is Nebuch, we're not up to the Nebuch yet. He meets another fundraiser or a poor man who knows that he has this letter. He says, you know, I'm going to buy that letter from you. So now I'll be able to go. He pays him well, and he buys the letter. So he has Chaim Yaakov's letter. Letter saying that he's a tayyeh egid, support him. Anyway, one day, Chaim, the new fellow, the fellow who bought the letter, is found dead. He has no identification on him except that letter. So they identify him as Chaim Yaakov. Word comes back to the city, it must have been Buchach. And the Dayanim and the Rabbanim deal with it until they paskin that Perel is allowed to remarry. And she remarries. One day, Chaim will decide he's going to go home. And someplace outside of the city, he meets somebody, and somebody tells him, you know, Perel. Carol's making the bris tomorrow. She had a baby boy and she's making the bris. Chaim is stunned. What's he going to do? Is he going to go into town and he's going to destroy the harmony of the family? He's going to turn the child into a mamza? He can't do that. You know what he does? He silently turns around and goes off into the world. In that story, Agnon uses a term from the Gemara. You know what Chaim did? Ochaz pelach shel shtika. He held the staff of silence. The Gemara, Rabban brings it now. The Gemara describes Rachel. Rachel was the one who chose silence. Watch. Rachel, Omrim Chazal, Rachel, our rabbi say, Tofsa Pelach Hashtika. She held on to the staff of silence. V'lachein Tofsu Bonneho the Pelach Hashtika. That ability to remain silent was something that was extremely noteworthy in the children of Rachel. Who are the children of Rachel?
Binyamin.
His stone in the Choshet was a Yoshpeh. A Yoshpeh means, as I'll say, yes, he has a mouth. He knows what the brothers did that they sold Yosef. But he remains silent. He never utters a word. Doesn't tell his father. Shaul is sent to find the donkeys that his father lost. And he's anointed. On that trip, he's anointed by Shaul to be the king of Israel. He finally comes home and his uncle asks him, no, what's this? What happened to earth? Pasuk says no, not a word about the fact that he is going to be the king of Israel. Esther is from the family of Binyamin. Eina Magedes, she doesn't tell Ahasuerus where she's from. Silence. As I said, Yosef does not know what's going on at home. He may cause an eruption in that house that will create a rupture between Yaakov and his children, and they'll never be called Israel. He remains silent. Ochaz Pelach Shel Shtika. Rachel is Shtika. Yaakov is the Dibur of Torah. This is a very special shidduch. It's not a shmuley boteach, passionate and girlish.
It's been childish.
It's
finished. It's gone. It's finished.
I gotta see if it comes out. You got my shama here. Okay. Watch. Let's finish this, and that means that the this was supposed to be the introduction to the shir. But these great words of Abba, this gives you a window into how you're supposed to take a look at the parsha of Kodesh. I've been telling you that for a long time, but you can't. Today, we're surrounded on all sides, where everybody thinks he can learn Pshat and Parsha Chumash the way he wants. And you know what they don't understand? They never get it. To say that Yaakov stole the Brachas and the Bechora, you don't have to be a genius to say that. It seems so from what's written beforeish in the Torah. The genius of Torah is go take a look slightly beneath the surface. That's where you have to go. But they don't. They think, yeah. Some great rabbi in this city, and I'm not going to tell you who, I remember it was 45 years ago, gave a great drush in his shul on Parshat Tolos, and he came up with the brilliant conclusion, Yaakov was a mama's boy.
Oh.
Brilliant. This is really brilliant. Brilliance is to be able to see beyond. What's the real story over here? Oh, tell me, Yaakov was a... I'm listening to you. I'm going to clean up my act now. Okay. Let's finish this piece. Rachel Oman Chazal Tofsu Pelach. She held on to that staff of silence, and so did her children. With all of her desire to be the wife of Yaakov, and the mother of Shiftei Kor, and she should be going to the chuppah now. This was most probably the great tragedy of her life. She maintained silence. She maintains silence, and it's all part of a divine plan. Shotgun rocket, lo sipro liyakov. She remained silent, and she didn't tell Yaakov. Al haramud shalavam mitatev l'ramoto, about the deception that Lavan plans to deceive her. V'lo ona l'shemasra simonah. She gave the signs to her sister Leah. L'chein gambonah tofsu v'pelach hashnika. Her children after were as well. Became the silent ones. Avno shel Binyamin b'choshen, the stone of Binyamin, and the choshen mishpat, the breastplate of the common gadol, was Yashpeh v'dor shechazal. So that the meram is al yesh peh. He has a mouth, but he knows what to do with the mouth. Shall take. He knows when silence is golden. Kiapapisha Binyamin yodav l'chidas Yosef, though Binyamin knew about the sale of Yosef, will kill us those love, he didn't tell it to his father. All that he would have done, He would have destroyed Klal Yisrael. That's what would have happened. Al Shol Nema Bat Shol, it says that Varam Aluchal Ohigit, he didn't tell his uncle about the fact that he's going to be king. Be'ester Be'ester says Ein Ester Margeres Lo'adata. L'chein, therefore, the Zibug over here, Yaakov, who is Amud HaTorah, who is the pillar of Torah, V'Rachel Yisod HaShtika Yirachel, whose power is in silence, they were suited for one another. Alright? This is the introduction to what we're going to have to say about Yosef. And you know what we're going to find? We're going to find, to learn the parshiot of Yosef, and, well, he was childish. He knows that his brothers don't like him. Why does he have to come tell them his dreams? And not only that, he insists, Shimon, please hear. What's he doing? Why is he creating such terrible strife in the field? Next week in Yerushalayim.